Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Fuel Radio, inspiration and training to fuel your day. Now here's your host, Rod Jan.
Good morning, this is Rod Jans with Fuel Radio. On the phone with me today is Sharon Drew Morgan. Sharon Drew is a sales maverick. She's in one of her first sales jobs. She was a multi-million dollar producer. Sharon is an entrepreneur. She's a thought leader in this whole area of sales. And she's also a best-selling author. She once had a book on the New York Times bestseller list called Selling with Integrity. Good morning, Sharon, and thank you for joining us.
And just to remind you, my first name is Sharon Drew.
I'm sorry, Sharon.
And I know it's an odd name, but you'll get used to it. And I'm such a cranky person when you don't use it that it's just easier to try to remember it.
Right. And I know that's one of the points you make in your book. There's no better way to lose rapport with someone than to say their name wrong. So, and here I am doing it. So
that's okay. I'll correct you, honey.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon Drew. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about your story. How did you learn to help buyers buy?
I was fired from every job I ever had because I think in systems, and I would walk into a new job and I would be there about a day and I'd say, fire this one and move this department over here, and so they'd fire me. Sometimes they let me stay for a month or a year, but I was always in trouble. I was fired from civil service, and that's really hard to do. I reorganized an entire inpatient psychiatric ward when the doctors were away because they had it all wrong, and I fixed it. So I kept getting fired from stuff. But then they couldn't fire me from sales.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized, I started off at Merrill Lynch. What I realized was that buyers were just stupid. When I had good clients, they loved me, they respected me, I played squash with them, for God's sakes, and they didn't do what they were supposed to do. And then I always heard salespeople talking about how stupid buyers were. And then I had a different kind of a sales job as a training manager in a company, and buyers were even more stupid there. So I couldn't figure out what was going on because they were perfectly smart people. Why were they behaving stupid?
Mm-hmm.
Then I started my own company, and I realized what the problem was. As an entrepreneur, I had people, I had investors. I hired my husband, my then husband, to work for me as a tech manager. He was really brilliant, really wonderful. The only problem was that at home our relationship was falling apart, separate from work. We never, ever had a fight about work. But so our relationship was falling apart in the middle of 43 employees. And but we needed to move. We needed sales training. I had to hire somebody else, and maybe we weren't going to get a divorce. So I had vendors come in to talk to me about, not sales training, we leadership training, to talk about leadership training, to realtors to come about potentially moving. And everyone's pitching me their wonderful wares, and I realized what the sales problem is. The sales model only handles needs assessment and solution placement. And it ignores all of the internal buy-in, change management, buying decision issues that buyers absolutely have to line up and address before they can move, before they can choose a solution.
Yeah.
If they don't, they face such massive disruption that they end up with a bigger problem than what they started with. And sales doesn't recognize that buyers live in a system. They think that a problem or a need, pain, which is a horrible word because they don't have pain, is part of a is an isolated event. They think that the need is an isolated event. And they forget that there's people and relationships and investors and stakeholders and initiatives and strategies and market forces and goodness knows what else that are involved in any kind of a change decision.
Mm-hmm.
So when I realized that, I developed in the early 80s this buying facilitation model, and I taught my salespeople. I also taught my tech folks how to do it because they were telling me that the buyers were stupid, that the clients were, the users were stupid. So I taught them to use this because it's a change management model. It's not a sales model. And they ended up being able to complete projects in half the time because they got buyers to recognize what needed to happen to make it all work throughout the system rather than just one little piece. And they didn't have to redo anything. So we ended up doubling our business every year, and I was able to retire after 3 years. And that was starting from scratch. So that's what I did. I learned how I put together a model to help buyers buy, and then you can sell. Then you can figure out what they need and sell your solution. But until then, you can't. I teach you how to become part of the buying decision team from the first call and make the sale an outcome rather than objective.
Mm-hmm. So just to go back to your story, you were actually, at that time, you were selling technology, and you happened upon this almost by mistake because you didn't know much about what you were selling. So you had to basically interview the buyers. Is that right?
You're talking about the first story in Selling with Integrity, and there's parts of that in my new book, Dirty Little Secrets, as well.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was selling. I didn't understand technology, but what I began realizing was that the kinds of decisions they have to make really have nothing to do with our solution. I'm going to tell you a delightful story. I was doing work at a very large telemarketing company for IBM many years ago, and we were selling $5,000 to $15,000 solutions, little pieces of technology, and they had like a 6 month sales cycle, and I was I teach my clients not in those days we had coupons. This was a long time ago, and I would taught my guys not to call and ask for that person because you never knew who was filling out the form, but to call and say, hi, my name is, I'm with IBM or whatever, and how are you currently adding new services to your accounting procedures or something like that, whatever. So the guy I was sitting with and doing coaching with, a woman answers the phone. It was in Rochester, New York. On November 22nd, on a Friday afternoon, with snow up to your eyeballs. And everybody wanted to get out. It was really cold and nasty. And he wanted to get out, but it was his last call. And a woman picks up the phone and says, hello. And John says, is Louis there? And she said, no, he'll be back Monday. And John said, fine, thank you, goodbye. Well, that's not what he was taught to do. So I said, dial the number again. I'm going to talk to her. And John said, no, it's just the secretary. I said, dial the number again, because she was a small business owner. We were calling small businesses. And so she said, hello, and I said, hi, my name is, I'm with IBM. How are you currently managing your accounting practices? She said, I'm managing it. Me, I am. I am, and if I don't get some kind of an accounting package by Wednesday, I'm going to divorce my husband.
Well,
so I went, well then, because we were selling accounting packages. That was one of the five we were selling, construction, the package, accounting package, five different things. So I said, well then, I said, so what has stopped you from getting something to help you out until now? She said, what stopped me is that my husband is trying to keep me working with him, and he doesn't want to bring anybody else in because he likes the fact that I'm here with him all day, and frankly, I'm going to kill him. So if you have an accounting package for me, let's buy it right now. And then she said, wait a minute. Lou, get on the phone. IBM is selling us an accounting package. So he gets on the phone, and he said, I'll buy it because otherwise I'm going to get a divorce. She gave me until Wednesday. So I said, wait. I said, you're a construction company. How are you making sure that all your contractors are getting you the right number so that you can pay them on time? And how are you managing them in the field? And he said, wow, it sounds like we need all of those things. You're selling all those packages? And I said, yeah, but we need to make sure they're appropriate for you. He said, no, just tell me about all of them. At which point I was in trouble because I had no idea what the hell I was talking about. And the sweat was dripping down my nose, and John was sitting there in front of me laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing. And I was in trouble. And I said, how about if we call you back Monday? Because I knew everyone was, like, leaving. And he said, no, no, now. I want it now. I'll be divorced by then. Now. I want it now. And I said, listen, I got a problem. I said, I'm the one with the mouth. I got to get you the ones with the brains. I said, can we call you back in 15 minutes? He said, yep, we'll be here waiting with a checkbook. And I went, wow. Oh, my God. So we went running upstairs, and we found four people with their coats and boots on and went running down the stairs. I actually lost a $150 Elsa Peretti pen in that run up and down the back stairs of this company. We ran back down the stairs again, and we got on the phone, and I was the mediator, and I'm asking my facilitative question. So how would you know that a package of this size would give you what you want and room for growth? And at what point would you be looking to add new people because this package might be too big for you now? So I was helping him make the decisions he has to make, and he ended up buying four out of our five packages.
Wow.
And I knew nothing. I knew nothing.
Yeah.
But when you can help, see, what I've done is I've systematized the approach of how buyers go through their internal buying decision process,
mm-hmm.
and that's generic. So it does. I went into another group, I don't know, KPMG or somebody years ago, and I was doing phone coaching with them, and I closed a $6 million deal on the phone without knowing what I was selling.
Wow.
Because it has nothing to do. The content is the very, very, very last thing that the
mm-hmm.
buyer needs.
Mm-hmm.
And what they need first is to figure out how to manage all the decision issues.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've seen people do with some of my facilitative questions is take them and try to manipulate the buyer into admitting, quote-unquote, admitting a need and admitting that they wanted to work with you and admitting pain. And it really infuriates me because my entire model is a change management model that truly helps the buyer recognize and manage all of the internal decision issues that have to be addressed before they can buy.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's subtle, but it's not so subtle. I mean, how do you help people get the difference? I guess it's just a part of your training. You must spend some time with people and help them to recognize how and why sales must change and why their approach must change. But maybe you can help us do that. I mean, in our conversations prior to this phone call, I know you've been helping me to get it, and I still fall back into that manipulative pattern. It's just been so ingrained in me in 20 years of sales. So
I have a question for you.
Okay.
What would you need to know or believe differently to be willing to enter a phone call with a client with a focus on helping them manage change rather than selling your solution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's sort of a confidence thing. I think it would be just like I think what you've done in the past is just to make a phone call and really stick to the method. And I think if I saw it work, and I have seen it work somewhat, that would definitely help me make the change.
So what I'm hearing, and I'm using the model on you. So hang on.
Okay.
Try to answer the questions because what buying facilitation does is it uses brain function.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually teaching your brain how to walk through the decision points in a very specific sequence. What I've done is I've coded the way brains go through decision making.
Yeah.
And I've recognized that decisions only get made when criteria are met. We don't make decisions based on data, and the entire sales model is based on gathering and offering data. And decisions don't get made that way. It's just the very last thing you need. So all of my facilitative questions, which is a new form of question that I developed to help you make decisions, help you gather your own criteria and make new choices.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say to you, what would you need to believe differently to be willing to enter a call using a change management decision facilitation model rather than try to push a product?
Mm-hmm.
So what would you need to believe differently? Do you know?
I'm not sure that I know. I mean, I'm not sure that I know. That's the honest answer. So.
Well, what you said a few minutes ago was you'd need some confidence.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that you have a belief that unless you have some sort of control or focus on your solution, that you might not make a sale.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Sure, okay. Yeah.
And what I'm also hearing is that you're also ignoring the fact that you only have a 7% success rate. So even though you're basically failing, you would rather maintain your failed model than change.
Ouch.
But sure. That's what you said. That's what you said. I didn't make it up. That's what you said.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay. Yeah.
So how would you know that leading the buyer through their decision points would give you fewer sales than if you continued pushing your solution?
Mm-hmm. I would have to practice it. I would have to just put it into practice.
So what I hear is that you're willing to do it once you have the skills.
Yes.
Okay. So that's just a very, very, very simple way of you being willing to buy something new.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could have expanded it and worked harder with you, but I just wanted to show a little baby example.
Yeah.
So I use facilitative questions and presumptive summaries in a very specific sequence to teach you how to manage change. Because you know what? I got the best solution in the world. So what?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're not going to choose it and you don't know how to use it, what difference does it make how terrific I am?
Right.
So with my prospects, as soon as they call, and I don't make any outgoing calls anymore like that, thank goodness I have enough books out. And my new book, Dirty Little Secrets, is doing really well, and people love it, so I'm getting a lot of calls from that. But as soon as people call me, even though it sounds like they are buyers, the first thing I say is, so what has stopped you until now from adding new skills to what you're already doing successfully?
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from one of the biggest banks in Europe about 6 months ago, and it was the head of commercial banking. And he said, hi, are you able to put buying facilitation in front of our technology so we can help customers at point of sale? And
mm-hmm.
most salespeople would go, oh, yay, I'm out there tomorrow.
Yeah.
But this, I don't think in terms of sales. I think in terms of change management. And the minute he said that, he knew we had a problem. So
mm-hmm.
I said, sure. There's my pitch. I'm done. I said, sure. What's stopping your tech guys from wanting to do that for you?
Yeah.
And he said, well, they're trying. They already bought your books, and they're trying to figure it out themselves. Of course they are. That's their job. It's, you know, a big bank.
Yeah.
And I said, so how would you and the buying decision team know that working with me directly would give you a different outcome than working from my books?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I have no idea, but let's get them together.
Yeah.
So a few days later, we had a big call with all the C-level people from this bank.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to go out there and so forth. So I helped him figure out who needed to be on the buying decision team, and I became one of the buying decision team members.
Yeah.
So telling them about my solution doesn't matter. And what happened is, their tech guys ended up doing 70%. They gave me 30%, which I'm going to do next year. I
mm-hmm.
would have liked it. It was a $1 million deal. I get $300,000 of it. But you know what? It took me an hour and a half. I didn't have to fly out there. And when I do, they're flying me.
Yeah.
And I got what was mine.
Right.
Plus, I helped them make a decision. And
yeah.
me telling them how terrific I was wouldn't have helped.
Yes.
So
yeah.
you hear the difference? Buyers have to do that crap anyway. They have to do it anyway.
They're going
to go with me or without me. And the salespeople have always sat and waited and hoped and lost 93% of their leads because
mm-hmm.
they're pushing solution to those people, then they wait until those 7% are ready.
Yeah.
And 80% of the rest will buy eventually from someone, and they leave behind a trail of dead salespeople.
Yeah. So I have another question for you. Let's say I get a job in sales, and I want to use your change management model. But the sales manager hiring me throws a binder at me and says, this is how we want to approach our prospects. What does someone do in that situation?
Well, you'll either tell them at the interview
that
you use buying facilitation. Now, I want to give you a little bit of caution. The only way to learn buying facilitation, you got to start with the books, and Dirty Little Secrets is a good place to start.
Yeah.
But it needs some form of additional coaching training from me because the model is so different and the skills are so different. And
yeah.
I've got a whole bunch of them on my site or studying with me. Or there's all kinds of different things, guided study and learning accelerators and modules, all kinds of things to learn. But you would need some kind of intervention, okay? So if you go to them as a buying facilitator, you get hired that way.
Right,
and
okay.
If they don't want to hire you that way, then you choose. Either you want to do it the old way. But
right.
One of the questions you could potentially ask is, what would you need to know about me to know that I can be successful doing it by helping buyers buy? And how would it be for you if I'm doing something different from the rest of the group?
Right.
He's got to make a decision. It's not about you.
Sure. Help them make a decision. Ask them some facilitative questions.
Yeah, facilitative questions, right.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's great. We ask everyone this, Sharon Drew. We ask them what inspires them. And so I wanted to ask you that question. What inspires you? What motivates you? What gets you up in the morning?
I have Asperger's. I have a nonverbal learning disorder, which is high-end Asperger's. And all my life, I have been the obnoxious one or the dysfunctional, socially dysfunctional one, and all, because I wasn't diagnosed until I was in my 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And all my life, I've known that I've had this wonderful, brilliant change management model. And so I've just kept getting healthier and better and groups and coaches and therapists and whatever, so I could be at least 85% functional. I'm still a little obnoxious sometimes, but you learn to love me anyway, just because it doesn't happen all that often anymore, thank goodness. So I have spent my life breaking apart what I do naturally. I've always used facilitative questions since I was a kid, because when somebody says, I can't do this, whatever, I would say, well, what's stopping you? And what would you need to be doing differently in order to give yourself a chance to learn it? And how would you know? I mean, I've done that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I invented facilitative questions as a child as part of my normal thinking and probably part of my Asperger's. And I've spent my whole life knowing and understanding at a spiritual level, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual, that I have a gift and it's my responsibility to give it to the world.
Mm.
So that keeps me going when somebody puts me down or somebody, whatever, that's not so bad anymore, it used to be. And it keeps me going. So when I see something wrong, I stand up for myself and I fight because I have this model and the world needs it. And I foresee a day very soon, actually after 22 years of slogging my way through this, that everybody's going to learn buying facilitation as part of the sales model. Because right now they're leaving out 90% of what goes on for the buyer and they have no control over. When you're using buying facilitation, you actually have control and influence over how buyers are buying. When you're selling, you've got no control at all whatsoever because you're pushing data and people don't decide based on data. They decide based on criteria. So I help them line up their criteria and then I give them back their control when I talk about my solution.
Right.
So that's what scares me. It's been a hard life. I'm not doing it again.
You really do have some wonderful resources on your website. And like you mentioned, you have a new book out entitled Dirty Little Secrets. And what's the best source for this book? Like where would you recommend people buy the book?
There's some choices. You can go straight to Amazon.
Yeah.
And by the way, the subtitle of the book's pretty cool. It's Dirty Little Secrets, Why Buyers Can't Buy and Sellers Can't Sell and What You Can Do About It.
Right,
The whole book is about systems and change and decision-making and how buyers go through the decision-making process and each aspect of the buying decision process. And then at the 50 pages at the end, there's a whole guided a case study on how to use it. So it's kind of cool. But Amazon has it. But if you go to buyingfacilitation.com, I have that book and my last book, which is called Buying Facilitation, which is more tactical. Dirty Little Secrets is more strategic. And then there's a bundle, and we give a little extra something in there with it. And I've got MP3s and all kinds of learning models. SharonDrewMorgan.com has cool blog posts. It's number 6 of the top 100 sales and marketing blogs. And have you looked at it? There's a lot.
I have. Yeah, in preparation for this interview, I went through it. Yeah.
It's cool, right?
It is. Yeah, it's very good. Yeah.
Yeah, and then on Fridays I talk about sales or digital selling or marketing automation or stuff, and on Tuesdays I do Cranky Tuesdays. And this Tuesday I was mad at Starbucks for not returning. Letting me return a broken CD that they had sold me. And so I wrote an email on it. I've gotten a blog post on it. I've gotten 3 calls from Starbucks, from the customer relations person, from the, I don't know, 3 calls from people, and they're all sending me CDs. So I said to the customer relationship person, I said, instead of you all sending me CDs, why don't you train your people better? Because she said, oh, it was just that person, and other people take them back. And I said, if you don't know what your groups are doing out there, you're not doing a good job from your end.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's my blog. It's kind of fun. And then newsalesparadigm.com has all things about buying facilitation on it.
Great. So there's lots of I'll list those on the blog once we post this interview so that people can get in touch with you that way.
Okay.
Great. And I'd love to talk to you again sometime about technology and how social media, et cetera, is affecting sales and how you're using it. We're almost out of time, so now wouldn't be the time to do that. But I really appreciate you joining me this morning. And, you know, in our prior conversations, we obviously had some things to clear up. And I'm looking forward to reading your book and accessing some of the things that you have online as well. I think it really is a revolutionary model, and I like so many of the things that you teach, and it was a real privilege to have you on today.
Thank you very, very much. It was a fun interview. Thank you for giving me my ability to talk for half an hour. It was great.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon Drew. Have a great weekend, and a Merry Christmas.
And you. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.